who did come. I hope more will be coming. I've been looking forward to the evening. To begin with, let's have several songs led by our song leader.
Thank you.
For our scripture reading this evening, I'd like to share with you some of Jesus' own words. I'll be reading from Matthew 7. And I'll read verses 13 through 29. Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. Beware of false prophets, which come unto you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. Not every one that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say unto me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name have done many wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine, and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man, which built his house upon a rock. And the rains descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And every one that heareth these sayings of mine, and doeth them not, shall be likened unto a foolish man, which built his house upon the sand. And the rains descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. And it came to pass, when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one having authority, not as the scribes. Okay, I would like to have your prayer request before we have our time of prayer.
Good evening. Is that working? Great. Good to see you. Thanks for inviting me out tonight. Special thanks to Joel. I'm not sure exactly what your time frame was, but he sent me an email probably a week and a half ago and said, I've got something in April, but you know, you really could do it on the 11th of March if you'd like. And so we worked it out to get that done for tonight. It's good to be here and to see many of you. There's a lot more familiar faces than names. I used to be really good at remembering names, and you know, I think once you get past that magic age of 50, I think things just start going downhill. At least that's what they tell me. So, and let me just see if my, oh, this is great that my technology will work. Can everybody see that okay? Joel asked me to talk about three things this evening. Talk about our mission, some of the things that we're doing to fulfill our mission, and then also talk a little bit about opportunities for participation at the manor. And working with our mission and trying to clarify that as an organization has been something we've been working at fairly regularly over the last year and a half. And a lot of that has come from the board working at developing the mission of the manor, which you see here, and it was approved in November of 2005. And our mission really is pretty simple. It's enhancing the quality of life of elders, staff, and the community at large within a framework of Mennonite values. And this was approved in November of 2005. And for the last year and a half, we've been working as a senior management team to try to figure out what that means as we lead the organization on a day-to-day basis. And so this is something that that we've more and more been using over the last several months. The board also, from late 2005 through July 2007, spent quite a bit of time outlining some core values. And I know that is probably small enough you can't read all of that, but The six core values are caring, responsibility, cooperation, vision, stewardship, faith. Those things that are all important to the manor. And I think one of the things that would be important to note is that this conversation was taking place during a time when things weren't always going so well at the manor. There were things going on internally and I think also in our relationships with some of our supporting congregations where there was some, I think, some questions about whether we were really staying true to our original mission and vision. And so while that was going on, the board was taking some time to really go back and take a look at what our values are as an organization and to clarify that. And so I think that's one of the good things that did come out of the time of upheaval was this renewed sense from the board about what was important to the organization and some clarity about how we as a people working toward a common purpose can bring that about. In April of this last year, we also commissioned a market research project that involved in-depth listening to people in our community. That included employees, residents, family members, church constituents, and then even the broader South Hutch, Hutchinson, and Reno County communities to try to remind ourselves and identify what are some of the clear and concise ideas about our identity and image. And all of that was really trying to go back and look at our history and our traditions and say, where have we come from? What are the values that have been important as we've gone along the way? And in a minute, I'll be sharing some of those ideas that were generated from those participants. But one of the things, I guess, that I would want to just say about what we're doing with that information is that we've been using that to try to craft programs that will deliver consistent and what we're calling on-brand experiences for our customers as we serve them every day. One of the ideas, or one of the fundamental pieces to achieving our mission, is to achieve what's called brand integrity. And this comes from a book by Greg Letterman called Achieving Brand Integrity. And really, it's the point where what you say you are, and when you're known as who and what you say you are, and when your external messages are consistent with the product that you deliver. And so we've really been working to think about how we can make sure that our internal operations and the internal way that we deal with each other as employees, as we deal with residents and family members and vendors and the community, to make sure that that's consistent with our marketing messages that we're putting out there in the community. And so we're trying to achieve that point of brand integrity. Since January of 2008, if you've taken notice of any ads in the paper, we have changed our advertising messages fairly consistently. Even on the radio advertising, we've done some things that are more public service announcement oriented as opposed to Reflection Village, come by, we're great, you know, come live the good life, whatever those messages are. We've been very intentional about trying to talk about the kind of place that we are and the kind of services that we are intent upon delivering. At our employee recognition banquet a few weeks ago, we introduced these ideas to our community, and we're calling this our guiding principle and standards of care. And again, this will help drive us to deliver the kinds of care and services that are consistent with our values and the principles that are so much a part of our tradition and history. And they also will serve as a barometer and framework for developing overarching training and coaching programs that will be the basis for our internal operations. This is a... Well, there it is. This is a slide that I don't know how helpful this is. You can see that you have a bunch of people standing on a couple of slabs that are identified as knowing, and you have this gap here, and then there's a slab over here that's labeled doing. And really what we're trying to do with our internal training program is to make sure that we hire good people that bring the kinds of skills and knowledge that we need to run our business and do that in a high quality way. But to take the knowledge and skills that individuals bring and bridge the gap between their individual knowledge and the common purpose, the common goals, the common language that we have in our organization that we need to be able to deliver those experiences and to create common behaviors, and really to end up with a result that is a consistent positive experience for the people who come in touch with our community. And really, this is our target that we're working toward is residents, staff, community at large, part of our mission statement, tying it back to that mission statement. An outgrowth of our research project is the three pieces that I'll talk about here in a little bit, which is our scriptural foundation, guiding principle, and standards of care. I think one of the things that I would want to say about this as I start to go through this is to say pretty clearly that we are not saying that this, how do I say this? This is not something that we are not doing. It's not something that's new to our organization. I think what we are feeling like, what we're going to be, what I'll share with you here in a minute in terms of these ideas, is really describing Mennonite Manor when we're at our best. When we're doing the things that we know we should be doing day in and day out, and what we're trying to do is to give some description and some clarity to that so that we can do it consistently, perform that on a regular basis, and then replicate that as a part of our operation. First of all, which is really primarily a primary factor for us, is that we are a faith-based organization. And certainly our beginnings are rooted in a tradition of Christian ministry and service. And so we felt that it was important as we developed these guiding principles, standards of care, is that we return to those Christian roots. And so we looked for a scripture that would capture that. And we feel it's really the first half of Matthew 7:12, which is the golden rule. And as we strive to answer the call of Christ in our lives and everything, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And of course, you all know this is a very familiar passage of Scripture that comes from Matthew 5-7, which is commonly referred to as the Sermon on the Mount. And this passage, chapter 5-7 in Matthew, is a place where Matthew gathers together a lot of Jesus' teaching about how people ought to live. And there are many things that are covered in this passage. Chapter 5 describes godly happiness compared to worldly happiness. It talks about the relationship between the old law or the old covenant and the new covenant. In chapter 6, he moves into warnings against pretentious displays of religion or religiosity, and instead calls us to single-mindedly go all out for God and in search of spiritual things. Chapter 7, of which this verse is a part, is a litany of instructions and warnings that has such a note of authority, as Joe read at the end of this passage, that it impressed the listeners that Jesus was talking with a sense of authority that was that they had not seen before. And in the midst of all of this, what we might call red meat of theology, what I'm impressed with is that this verse, in its simplicity, in verse 12, is sort of stuck in there, and it's simple in a lot of ways, and yet it's very difficult to achieve. And Jesus gives this verse a very significant amount of importance. It even self-proclaims its sufficiency as a summary of the good news. And if you read the whole verse, it says, "So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets." And you know, we could have a whole sermon on how Jesus, the high view that Jesus had of the law and the prophets. He obviously didn't come to do away with the law, but to fulfill it. And he often referred to the prophets in terms of trying to help people understand the message of the good news. But clearly, this is an important verse. It's a simple verse, and it's one that's easily understood. And so we've chosen this as a theological foundation, the most basic tenet of our guiding principle and standards of care, which is observing the golden rule. Our guiding principle, which is answering Christ's call by offering resident-centered and relationship-based care, providing residents the type of living accommodations that we would desire for ourselves and for our loved ones. And this is an outgrowth of the golden rule. And in a lot of ways, in and of themselves, the scriptural foundation and the guiding principle could be adopted by any organization, really. Even for-profit organizations that are owned by families, the Christian families. So there's nothing special about it in the sense that anyone could adopt this. In fact, there's this notion of culture change in our industry where organizations adopt language and programs that's meant to place residents at the center of decision-making and resident life. But my experience is that a lot of these things still feel somewhat institutional. And so what we're really intent on doing is distinguishing ourselves not by doing culture change, which to me seems like kind of an odd way of talking about, you know, not being institutional, but by changing our culture so that it becomes a part of our organizational rhythm and to be naturally in touch with residents who choose to live at our place. And so we have gone a little bit further and tried to come up with some standards of care that we think will help us be a little bit more distinctive in how we do our work. The first one is extending hospitality. And when we say extending hospitality, we're talking about creating and maintaining a warm environment, allowing our residents to feel welcome and appreciated and cared for. And I guess we would go on to say that that means whether it's the first time they come in the door or the 10th time they come in the door or the 100th time they come in the door. And for people who have lived there for 10 or 15 years at our place, maybe the 1,000th time that they've come in the door, that our goal would be to extend Christian hospitality to all who come in contact with us. Family members, residents, co-workers, potential employees coming in to fill out an application, vendors, everybody who comes into contact with Mennonite Manor would experience that hospitality. It also means making sure that everyone feels the same welcome and hospitality whether they come in on a Friday afternoon at 4:30 when people are getting ready for the weekend, or if they come in at 10 o'clock on a Wednesday morning when we're in the middle of our week and probably more or less in stride. The whole idea is that can we, by establishing a standard of care for extending hospitality, can we make that a consistent experience that people will have time after time when they come in? The second standard is building friendships. Building friendships with our residents, that means genuinely getting to know the people offered into our care, allowing us to appropriately listen, anticipate, and react to our residents and co-workers. I had one person, we did a number of focus groups around our organization as we were introducing these ideas to the whole community, and I had one person tell me that at another nursing home, they were told specifically not to get too close to the residents. Don't get to know them too well. It won't be as hard when they die. And, you know, we all have many, many acquaintances, but fewer friends. What I want to simply try to say is that we want to intentionally try to have deeper relationships with the people who live at our place. And I think that if we have deeper relationships and we can establish caring relationships with the people around us, that we'll be able to provide better care. Todd Schlosser, our campus pastor, also gives the example to think about when you invite guests into your home. Obviously, you spend a lot of time getting ready, maybe cleaning out some corners you wouldn't have otherwise, or putting things away, making everything just fine. And then when your guests arrive, you bring them in, sit down, and you invite them to the dinner table. And you certainly don't, at that point, then sit there and tell them about all of the hard things that you had to do to get ready for them to come to visit. Obviously, you wouldn't do that. As the host, you want to make your guests feel welcome and feel like you want them to be there and that you're interested in them as individuals. And so I think a lot of times in our industry and in a lot of businesses, if you have a problem and you call somebody up in customer service and they tell you about all of the difficulties they had and why it's so hard to serve you, people don't want to hear that. And so we're trying to make sure that we can build friendships in a way and build relationships in a way that helps to enhance the kind of care that we can give. The third standard is embracing the call, and this means providing responsive, attentive, and compassionate care that is both timely and consistent. And I'd like to say a couple of things about this particular standard. The first one is that being consistently good is better than being occasionally great. How many of you have had a McDonald's hamburger or a quarter pounder with cheese in the last month? Actually, I'm pretty proud of you if that's all that has done that. You know, I have never been... I occasionally stop by McDonald's and get a quarter pounder with cheese. And I have to tell you, I have never been disappointed. I have never been overly excited. But I always get what I expect. It's consistent. And so I know when I want a mediocre hamburger quick, usually quick, I can go to McDonald's and pick one out. Now, we're not setting mediocrity as a standard, but I think the point that I would want to make is that we would want, as people come to visit the manor and come in contact with us, that they would always get what they expect, which is a high-quality experience where people are caring, and that we do it consistently and we do it on time. The second thing that I would say about this is that we are not necessarily expecting everyone who comes to work at the manor to feel like they're being called to a lifetime of service at the manor, although we are certainly open to that. But really, I think for us, it's an understanding that when you come to work at the manor, at this time, in this place, we can have a strong sense of mission and purpose in the work that we do, and that we can feel like our work is meaningful, and that we are doing ministry, and that we are serving others at this point in time. And so for us, that is in part what embracing the call means. The fourth one, the fourth standard is offering life with dignity. And this means providing thoughtful and respectful care for each of our residents. You recall I mentioned the market research project that we did last year. And when we began that formal research, we had a specific task in mind for the researchers, and that was to find out what we had to do so that people would feel like Mennonite Manor could be home. And we had a very specific task for the researchers. And the one thing that we found out very quickly, that one of the first things that the researchers told me when they had completed their interviews and they were doing their report, is home is not it. Particularly in our healthcare side, in the nursing home side, they said home is not it. Home is where they grew up. Home is where they raised their children. Home is where they lived for 40 years. Home is where they went to church. Home is and I think it might even be somewhat specific to the Kansas culture and the kind of community that we are in a mostly rural type of a community, the kind of community that Hutchinson is. But home was not the concept that we could recreate on our campus that would encourage or entice people to come to our place as opposed to somewhere else. But what people really wanted was a place where they could have life with dignity, and that's where this standard came from. And so these are the four standards of care that we are using together with our scriptural foundation and guiding principle. And this really will provide the backbone for how we develop the internal culture to deliver the outward expression of our mission and values that were listed at the beginning. Some of the other things that we're doing that are helping us fulfill our mission is some specific things we're doing in terms of building our team. At the senior management team level, we are asking, well, at all levels in the organization, we are unapologetic. I guess my good friend Dale Schrog, who is a director of church relations at Bethel College, talks often about being unapologetically Christian and authentically Mennonite. Unapologetically Christian and authentically Mennonite. And that is, we are being very open about that when we go through the hiring process. And in particular for the senior management team or people who are going to have a significant leadership role in the organization, this paragraph actually is the lead paragraph as a part of the, at the very beginning of everyone's job description who is on the senior management team. And it says that Mennonite Manor is sponsored by 8 Mennonite congregations in the area. The position requires the employee to be a Christian with specific appreciation for the Mennonite perspective, to demonstrate Christian living, and to be willing to support the mission of Mennonite Manor. We're making that statement up front, saying, you know what, this is an important piece of who we are. And in addition, for all other positions, whether it is a part-time housekeeper through middle management and even many high-level management positions. And the first sentence, or this sentence here, was, as you can probably see, crafted by an attorney to keep us legal. But the position requires the employee to not be adverse to, I think what I wanted to say is to appreciate the qualities of Christian faith. But he said to be legal for non-leadership people, we really had to say it this way, so I guess I accepted it. But this position requires an employee to not be adverse to the qualities of Christian faith and to be willing to support the mission of Mennonite Manor. Mennonite Manor is very ecumenical. I think 25% of our residents or thereabouts come from a Mennonite background. They are very strong, come from very strong Christian traditions. And so unapologetically Christian works very good for our residents. It's a little bit different on the hiring side. We have a very small percentage of our employees who are Mennonites. We do have a large number of our employees who are Christians, and we have a number of people who work there because we're a Christian organization. We've had a number of people who have said recently that one of the reasons they came to work at Mennonite Manor is because they can be open about their faith. Their faith experience and their faith values are important to us as an employer. Some of them came from construction, trade, or from other organizations for which that wasn't important. So for many of our employees, that's important. But, you know, not all of our employees are Christian, and some who come from some very interesting family situations come from lower levels of society. Sometimes in those situations, we are a mission to them. And so we want to certainly provide an opportunity and an invitation for people to come to work for us. They know we're overtly Christian, but we, as long as they are not acting adverse to our values, we certainly welcome them and try and see that as a part of our Christian witness as well. But being overtly Christian as an organization and as an employer is very important to us. One of the other things we're doing is we're renovating one of our eightplex, what was an independent apartment eightplex. We're converting eight independent living apartments into seven units, 14 beds of assisted living. The graph that you can see right here is showing that before the renovation project, we had 141 independent living units, 126 healthcare units, and only seven assisted living units. And we're going to be doubling this to 14, and we know somewhere we have more assisted living that we need. But this has been a real glaring need in our continuum of care, and so we've been working towards that, and we hope that by early to mid-summer that will be open. And actually, Pauline reminded me to pass a message on to Merlin about the generator. So it's a good thing you were here tonight. One of the other things that we're doing, and this is getting to be, I think, going to be one of the more interesting projects that I'll be involved in, and this is going to be a part of the project that I think is going to occupy a lot of the board's time over the next probably year or two anyway, is trying to develop a model that answers the question, what should Mennonite Manor look like in 2025? We have gotten some preliminary demographic study results back that are telling us something about our community. We really feel like that it's important for us to know where we're going in terms of the kind of structure that we expect to have for the organization, the number of buildings and that sort of thing. But I think one of the other questions that we want to try to answer from this is how do we succeed at both meeting our mission, which is, I think, part of the original mission was to help people in the South Hutch community who had outlived their resources. But how do we do that at the same time we're generating sufficient margins to be able to maintain our campus to grow appropriately for our community and for our region? So I think this is going to be one of the more interesting exercises that senior management team and the board go through, and I'm looking forward to this exercise. Joel had also asked me to talk a little bit about opportunities for employment. I would say primarily our needs right now are for clinical and food service workers. The last couple of years have been pretty tough in that we had to hire a lot of outside agency staff, which would be mostly nurses and certified nursing assistants who work for another company and then just work for us on an as-needed basis. And so we'd have a lot of people rotating through, and there are a variety of reasons for that, and we've We've eliminated most of that kind of employment, but we still do have some hiring that we need to do, and so there would be opportunities for employment primarily in the clinical positions, but also in food service. We do post our openings on the website, and we hope that that if there are folks in our sponsoring church communities who are looking for work, that you would come by and talk to us. I think one of the things that I would say here too, and this is sort of goes back and acknowledges some of our frailties of the last couple of years, I think for a period of time it was pretty hard for people to get hired at the manor, and this was during a time when we needed staff. And the only thing I can say is that the people who were in charge of hiring at that time are no longer there. So we've fixed that, we think. But I guess the one piece of feedback I would like is if you have people who come in and are looking for work and they're not being received in the way that I described, with hospitality and being treated with dignity, let me know, because I can do something about it, and I will. So I think we have a pretty good team in place, and I'm very happy with what they're doing. I think we're seeing applications come in, but again, if you're looking for work, we'd be glad to have you consider coming in. Just a couple of other opportunities. One of the ideas that we've been working with over the last year is trying to figure out how we can increase the number of volunteers, and I would say more formal volunteers. Distinguish this maybe from the we have lots of community groups that come in, and we certainly appreciate all of the efforts that you as a congregation put forth for Sunday morning, Sunday evening services, midweek times, coming and visiting, and so we certainly appreciate that. But one of the things that we've been working on is to try to figure out how we could get some more formal volunteer program going. This year we have a young lady who graduated from Heston College last spring, and she's doing a one-year Mennonite voluntary service term with us. We are planning to be at Rosedale's mission conference next week. To try to recruit some additional young folks. We're planning to be at Mennonite Church USA General Assembly this summer, setting up a booth, trying to talk to people about volunteer opportunities in the Hutchinson area. We're not quite sure how long it will take to put this together, but we think if we had 15 to 20 volunteers from across the denominations of our sponsoring churches on our campus at any one time, that could have a huge impact on the culture and the nature of how we do things. And so we're kind of excited about what we could possibly work out along that line. Pray for us. I think that we're in a very interesting industry. It's a very complex industry. And the next point after this one, you'll hear some of my predictions about what I think is going to happen. But pray for us. It is easy, I think, sometimes to get lost in sort of the routine of the day, and we sometimes forget about what we say we want to do, and with the kinds of things that we want to do to be an extraordinary organization that is overtly Christian, and where people can see that. I probably shouldn't say this, but I've said this particularly in business settings, that if you're really a Christian business person, people will flock to your business because you treat them so well. I mean, it sort of goes without saying, and yet we tend not to think about that or talk about that so overtly in the Christian community, and maybe in the Mennonite community, because it maybe has a bit of pride attached to it, we might think it a bit unseemly. But I think that's the truth. I mean, I think God wants us to serve and serve well, and for us to do this in our business, where it's day in and day out looking after people's needs, we need prayers. And so that is an area that you can really support us, and we do appreciate that. And I know there are times when we can feel the prayers of the people and from our supporting congregations. The last thing I guess I would just mention is to consider financial gifts. I'm very certain about increased government regulation and mandates. If you listen at all to what's going on in Washington when they talk about reforming health care, They're going to be talking about significant increases in government getting involved and meddling in things that I don't think they know a whole lot about. They think they know a lot about it, but the reality is I think they don't. One of the things that's most striking for me coming into this industry is how much I hear my colleagues complain about all of the government regulations, and then whenever there's a financial shortfall, they run to Washington to get more money. And everybody knows that money that comes from Washington comes with strings attached. So I'm very certain about that increased regulation and mandates. I'm not optimistic, though, about the government being able to fund the promises they're making to make that happen. They're not listening to very many economists, I don't think, in Washington. So I think that for us, being in the healthcare industry, I think that presents quite a challenge for us. I think one of the ways that we can continue to do the kind of work that we think we want to do, which is high quality, providing the best care, is to look for additional sources of financing. We'll be looking for grants, probably looking at grant proposals to private foundations to try to figure out if there are ways that we can fund programs and buildings more through donations rather than debt. So those are some of the things that I would see on the horizon, and I guess I would, well, hang on just a second here. I hit the button one too many. Let's try this. There we go. Any questions? Be glad to answer any questions that you would have. Certainly be happy to receive any comments that you have about your experiences with the manor. And so what would you have?
How's the greenhouse? Are they working with what you expected?
I'll give you a Jamaican answer. Yes and no. We really like the small house model, where you have smaller groupings of people who live together, and the architecture is great. There are some things about managing the clinical pieces, the state regulation pieces in that setting that are a little bit more of a challenge, and so we've not been able to implement that completely the way we want, but largely I think we're satisfied with the kind of experience that people have. I think our residents that live in the greenhouses, well, I don't have any data on this, but anecdotally it seems to me that they appreciate living there a lot more. That hasn't been universal. There have been some people who wanted to move back. We've actually had some people, very few, but a number who wanted to move back because, let's face it, they like dormitory life where they could get out and see 50 or 60 people. So there are, you know, there are some differences. We have some challenges with transportation and getting people back and forth, particularly for those who aren't ambulatory. So there's it's mixed, but I'd say on balance it's positive, and I think there's a lot that we can work with there. Other questions? Yeah.
I wasn't too familiar with the term assisted living. You had healthcare and assisted living, something else, independent.
Yes.
Can you describe this one?
Yeah, independent living is the least. The least amount of assistance. People basically live on our campus independently as though they lived in the community. Sometimes they will have home health care come in or somebody come in and do cleaning, lighthouse work, help with bathing, you know, some things like that. But they basically can live alone. Assisted living is sort of between the independent living and the full 24-hour day, 7-day-a-week care. Assisted living could be as simple as just needing somebody there to set up your medications every day and make sure you take your medications. Or it might be that you need medications, you need help bathing, you need help getting dressed. So there's a wider, it's just at the point where you just can't quite live alone and you really need somebody there to help you make sure you get some things taken care of. We do have some people who live in assisted living who still drive. So it's not complete. I mean, it's not complete, helplessness isn't the right word, but I mean, it's not that they're completely unable to care for themselves. We have what's in our industry what's called activities of daily living, and it's a whole range of things. And it might be simply a matter of just having somebody get a bath every day. And so they're willing to pay for an apartment where they have that person. And it's and assisted living is staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But it's one med aid with, I think we have 9 or 10 people in our assisted living building. So it's one person per 10, and there is not a nurse on site. Whereas in nursing care, there has to be nursing care on site, and there's a higher level of certified nurses assistance hours that are required per resident day. So does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Occupancy, the question is about years ago we had a waiting list and occupancy is now. In our healthcare building, we have 126 beds, and since for the last 6 months we have been running, I guess we would say, more than full. We budget for 95% occupancy, which is about 120 residents on a daily basis. And we've been running for January and February, we've been running between 123 and 124. So there is effectively a wait list. We've had a couple of residents from our independent living who we were not able to take right away because we were full, and that's the first that we've had that problem in some time. And that's a different kind of problem than having people who can get in right away because we have 12 or 15 empty beds. So it's good from a financial standpoint. It's not quite as good from a it makes it more of a challenge to manage that. Assisted living is, well, we'll end up with double the amount of units, and we expect them to be full immediately. Probably mostly from people on our campus, but I think we have a couple people from off campus who may come back for that. Where we have right now some slack in the line is in independent living, and I think to some degree it's cyclical. To some degree it is. It's the nature of the economy right now. You know, houses aren't selling, and a lot of people don't want to move in until they get their house sold or until they think they can get their house sold. So I think that's where we're seeing some slack right now. Well, thank you so much for having us out tonight. I told Joel it wasn't going to be sermony, but we do feel a very strong sense of God's hand working at the manor. We have a number of challenges ahead of us, but we're grateful certainly for your support, and we're grateful to God for allowing us this opportunity to minister together. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Lowell. I hope that it's been helpful to you all to hear about some of the things at the manor. I know before my first experience on the board, I had very little connection, and by now I feel quite involved. I have to say my world is much bigger than it would be without the manor. I've enjoyed that experience. And I'd like to think that in the future we'll have more people involved, volunteering, being employed there. And I haven't heard anyone here yet say that they are standing in line to serve on the board, but I hope that time will come. One of the board members, this happens to be from South Hutch Mennonite, said that he had to stand in line to get on the board. And I'd like to see that kind of eagerness. And I have to say, I think once involved, some of you would enjoy that experience. Lowell, thank you for coming and sharing with us. I'd like to ask Leroy Hershberger to lead us in prayer as we stand.